Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5, The Game.
What's going on, everybody? Teron Davenport in the studio. Talking with TD, that's what you're doing right now. Another week, man. These weeks just keep rolling. It's funny, you know, when you look forward to something so much, it just keeps coming and coming and coming. Every week I look forward to doing this show. I look forward to sitting here in this studio with my man Calvin Smith to my left-hand side on the board making things happen. This week we're going to focus on some takes from rookie minicamp, what to look forward to in the next phase of OTAs. We got Calvin's Corner talking shop. We are doing whatever we can to get you guys, the listeners, more involved. So please be sure to tweet us any type of topic ideas or anything that you will want. We're going to get into a mailbag. We have some big things coming. We're working on some things to be able to expand this show and offer you more and more, because that's just how we do. So kicking things off for this week, I wanted to get into some of the takeaways from rookie minicamp. And first, let me say this. We only had 25 minutes to look at these guys. One day out of the 3 days. So I can't give you extensive details, but I can give you details of what I saw. So that's what I'm going to get into. It's something I hope that they at some point expand. This is new to me. In my previous stops, we did get more time with the rookies at rookie minicamp. And that's not to say Titans PR has, you know, done a bad job, because they've been really, really good as far as giving us access and getting players for us and making things happen. So I'm not taking a shot at Titans PR at all. I'm just saying this is a little different from what I've seen in the past. However, what you have to do is make the best of what's available to you. And that's why we're going to get into this. So when you look at rookie minicamp, right? There were different things that I definitely wanted to see. I was hoping to be able to at least just talk to Jeffrey Simmons at a presser. We weren't able to do that. I understand that, though. It's something a couple years ago when Sidney Jones was selected by the Eagles and he was hurt the whole time. We didn't get to speak to him until into the season. So it just is what it is, folks. Unfortunately, do not expect to hear from Jeffrey Simmons for a little bit. Now, if it happens to be available, if he happens to be available, then, you know, obviously we'll bring it to you, but don't expect to hear anything from him. However, there were other guys in this draft class. This wasn't a solid draft class just because of Jeffrey Simmons. So we'll get right into A.J. Brown. And A.J. Brown, obviously the second round pick. I was impressed with a few things from him. When he catches the football, you could really tell that he's a very confident, comfortable hands catcher. The ball does not touch his body until he tucks it. Every time it just kind of, it hits his hands and it makes that sound. Psst, psst, just like that. And that's just like, that's the ball just stopping at the gloves. He had the highlight of the 25-minute session that we were able to see, a one-handed grab. And if you guys heard on Twitter, I think it was A to Z Sports, Zach Bingham. He recorded it, and he was standing next to me. And I recorded it, too, but for some reason, it didn't pick up my audio. But after he made the catch, I was like, ooh, like that. And it was on. So if you heard the funny sound like that, that was me. And it just was just me just like, all right, yeah, that's what's up. He made a solid catch. But I think it was really good, just his willingness to get in front of the line. He was making an effort to jump in front of the line and be first in the drills. And one of the things I also saw, when you look at the coaching staff, we've talked at length about how involved this coaching staff was. I was really impressed. It looks like Coach Rob Moore still has those sweet feet, because he went in and I actually posted a video of it. He went in and he was just showing them just the stop and start and go, that type of motion he was showing him that in one of the drills. And, yeah, he looked like he still had the sweet feet. And he ran a couple routes for them to kind of show them how that works. I thought that was really interesting because we didn't see Coach Moore doing that as much last year. He wasn't the guy that's working through the drills as much as just pulling the guys aside after the drill and saying, okay, this is how, verbally telling them, but not physically going through. So that is a difference that we're seeing this year, at least so far in rookie minicamp. So when you talk about the receivers, that's what stood out to me. Anthony Ratcliffe Williams, the undrafted free agent out of North Carolina, we'll get into him a little bit later, but I thought he caught the football really well also. And he's someone I think may have a chance to make this roster. So when you look at the receivers, that's what we saw from them. Moving on to the defensive backs. And before we move on to the defensive side, let me just say this about Arthur Smith too. The practice that we saw was very crisp. Again, 25 minutes, so take it for what it's worth. But what we saw of Arthur Smith working with the offense, it was very crisp. And he was at all different units. You saw him at the running backs. You saw him at the receivers. You saw him with the offensive line as well. You saw him with the tight ends. And for me, you know, when I see a coach bringing that energy, bringing that confidence, and then you hear players just kind of reinforce that, I think that's a good thing. That's one of the things that A.J. Brown talked about in his presser. He said that Arthur Smith was very detailed and he's going to demand the most out of him. I know it kind of seems like coach speak, but I think it was good that he said the detailed part of it because, you know, if a route has to break at 14 and work back to 12, that's what the quarterback's expecting it to happen. That's how he's expecting it to be. So he needs to focus on those details, you know, with the receivers because you have a quarterback and Marcus Mariota. What's the biggest thing with him? Trust. He needs to trust that you're going to break that at 14 and work it back to 12 and square up and be that big target and keep the corner, the defender, from intercepting the pass. That's just something that has to happen. So I was impressed with Arthur Smith with that. And then, you know, when you talk about Nate Davis, not only was it only 25 minutes, but these guys are in helmets, shorts, and T-shirts. So you're not really going to see much from the offensive line. But Nate Davis, after the practice, I asked him specifically about working on that frog stance, and he said that's something that he's continuing to work on. And another reporter asked him about just why he needed to get away from that, and he mentioned Aaron Donald. And I like that he mentioned a guy like Aaron Donald because, you know, that lets me know, all right, he's watching the best. And when you look, when you're going against a guy like Aaron Donald, as Nate Davis said, You can't lose a second, right? You have to be able to fire right out of your stance. You can't stand up, like you said, because that loses time. And also, when you look at just working in the zone scheme, when you're going to block spots, it's about getting to a spot before the defender does. Going back to what we said about losing seconds. So him being able to make that adjustment already is a good thing. I just want to see how that's going to work in live action. When you're actually hitting, when you're actually in a game, anything dealing with mechanics for, I don't care what position it is, quarterback, offensive line, receiver, anything, it's easy to get that down in practice. The hard part is moving that from practice to live parts of practice and eventually to games. That's when you tend to resort back to your old habits. As I said the other day on the afternoon show, I could sit here over and over again in the mirror. I could sit in the mirror over and over again and speak and make a conscious effort not to use or you know and do it. But you sit down in the chair, you got this mic in front of you, you got the headphones on, guess what happens? You resort back to bad habits at times. And that's just talking about just speaking. Imagine putting things together from an actual football perspective in your stance, doing something like you are required to wipe away something that you've done for 4 years and start anew. Oh, and by the way, you're going against the highest level of competition there is on this planet. It's not going to be easy. But that's all a part of the work in progress that Nate Davis is. I'm really interested in seeing how that is going to happen when we get to training camp. And again, when we have the live portions of practice, full gear, and they're going at it, I want to see how he is. I can't wait to see him going against this defensive line. I can't wait to see him going against Jarrell Casey. I can't wait to see him going against the size of a Daquan Jones. It's going to be good to watch. But that's enough about Nate Davis. I could bore you all day about the offensive line talk. Let's talk about some of the other positions that I know you guys want to see. And first things first, we'll get right into Amani Hooker. Now, Amani Hooker, I thought was really interesting, again, during individual period. So you didn't see them working as a group as far as like with the linebackers and the D-line, you know, in team install type of perspective. But one thing we did get to see was the safeties and cornerbacks working together. And I thought Amani Hooker did a really good job of communicating. You could see him talking to the corners, and when he was, like, he would drop back, and you could hear him, hey, watch the crosser, that type of communication back and forth. What you're seeing already is a guy who was a leader on his college team becoming a leader among other rookie players. And I think that's something that is key, because as a safety, it is your job to communicate. That's first and foremost. You have to communicate and let guys know what they may be looking at, what may be coming to them. Those are things that you have to be able to do. And to be able to do that after one day of practice, I think was remarkable. And that shows that this guy is in the playbook. That shows he has a high football IQ. And that's actually something I asked him about during the presser. I wanted to know, okay, is it a huge adjustment going from being able to communicate with guys that you've played with for years as opposed to a whole new group where you're not that lead dog in the room anymore? You're in the room with some of the top safeties, the top safety in the league. You're in a room with some veteran cornerbacks. How is that adjustment going to be made? And he really just, he had a good answer. He said the main thing for him was just to make sure that he was on top of the playbook. He knew exactly everything that he needed to know as far as being able to diagnose plays, as far as where he's supposed to be, where others are supposed to be, and he's just going to let that speak for itself. That, folks, is a very good answer from a guy who is advanced as far as football IQ is concerned and as far as just being a mature football player. I think that was really good that he had those answers. Now, we'll see how that continues to matriculate as they go into the next phase. That's something I'm going to be looking for. And fortunately for the next practice, we're going to have the opportunity to see full practice. So we'll be able to get a little more in depth as far as what we're seeing. And you'll see the team together working. So that'll help us out as far as some of the things that we're trying to figure out as this team moves forward. One of the other things I thought was really interesting was DeAndre Walker. And you guys all know how Mike Vrabel loves to work with the guys one-on-one, right? We saw it with Christian Wilkins. We saw it with Ed Oliver. That going on. We saw it before games where he and Daquan Jones would actually go at it. He has Vrabel would have that big umpire's pad on, and the guys would hit it. Somebody got him, though. Somebody got coached. He had a little gash on the right side of his nose. Awesome quote from him. He said, that's the price of doing business. I thought that was pretty funny. But that just lets you know, I like Vrabel as a coach. Will Compton talked about it last week, just how he's willing to jump into things and really get involved. So that's a good thing. But when you look at DeAndre Walker, he and Mike Vrabel spent an extensive amount of time one-on-one during our individual period. You kind of saw him progress from rep to rep. Like Coach Vrabel would tell him, okay, you got to turn your arms this way. And he would actually, because we couldn't hear what he was telling him, but you could see from the motions that he was going through with him. And then you would see Walker literally duplicate those motions on the next rep. I asked Vrabel about that, and he you know, gave Walker a good word, an endorsement, a compliment. That's the word I'm looking for. He complimented Walker for being able to go from rep to rep and take that coaching. I thought that was really good. And just being able to get that one-on-one, you could allow the coach to really feel your power. Again, they're not in pads, but when you're going hand to hand, that type of thing, shoulders, you know, you're putting your hands on shoulders and you're kind of turning and using your force. That's something where you can get an idea of how strong a guy is. So I thought that was really good that Walker was able to do that. It's funny, Walker on the presser, on a conference call, he said it had been too long since he got to put his hands on somebody. So I asked him, you know, are you relieved that you got to finally put your hands on somebody? And he laughed, and I said, that somebody just happened to be your head coach. But it was really good to see him out there. I think he's someone that's going to have a bigger role than a lot of us are saying right now, because he's a three-down player. This draft class was really good. We opened up with Jeffrey Simmons, so I'll close with him. And when you look at Simmons, we didn't get to talk to him, but when we were walking by the workout room behind the tinted windows, we did see Simmons riding a bike. That's a good sign. He was there, and when we left, he was kind of walking around there. Again, we didn't get to talk to him, but just him riding a bike, doing that type of motion when you're recovering from a knee injury like that, that's a good thing. We'll see when he's back. Another thing that we saw was Bob Shoup, Mississippi State's defensive coordinator. He was there with John Robinson for basically the whole practice, just kind of talking shop. So that just tells you the kind of clout that Jeffrey Simmons has, right? You know, your defensive coordinator in college is there on the sideline at your second practice with the GM. So expect big things from Jeffrey Simmons in the future. I definitely think that's the case. But like I said, we're going to kind of roll things forward to the next phase, and that's when you'll see the full team workout. I'm going to be looking for how Delanie is working through that individual development program, Delanie Walker, that is. Jonnu Smith, I want to see where he is also. I can't wait. I'm going to be looking to see, okay, is he going to be in sub packages with his hand in the dirt? Is he going to be standing up as an edge defender? Where are they going to put him? How are they going to use him? Because I think even though he's 37 years old, I think he can still play a lot of reps. I think he'll be a part of a rotation, but they'll be able to use him in multiple roles. So that's something we're definitely going to watch. Not really going to get to see much from Roger Saffold. We can see maybe just his footwork in person, right? But again, they're not in pads, so you're not going to see much from that perspective. I want to see who starts out at right guard. You know, John Robinson said they're not just going to anoint someone as the starter. That's someone talking about Nate Davis. So we'll see how that works. I want to see if Kevin Pounfell is going to be, you know, the starting right guard. And this period, you know, you're going to – I like the thing with Coach Jim Schwartz, defensive coordinator for the Eagles. He would always say that OTAs and rookie minicamp, as well as minicamp, the offseason workouts, that's an opportunity to kind of fine-tune things like a baseball player. He always referred to Jim Palmer. Coach Schwartz is a Orioles fan, so he would refer to Jim Palmer, and he would say, you know, that was when Jim Palmer would work on his screwball, whatever he would work on, and that's what these guys are doing. You're kind of fine-tuning and trying different things out. I think that's what you're going to see from some of the guys that have been here before that we've seen over and over again. So that's kind of what to look for as we spin forward to the next phase of OTAs. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back. A little Marcus Mariota talk. You know we got to touch on that. So we'll be right back.
Hey, baseball fans. I'm Ryan Porth.
And I'm Calvin Smith.
Tune in to our brand new Home Plate podcast every Friday at thegamenashville.com all season long.
We'll have unique interviews with the Nashville flavor and hit on the latest topics in the baseball world.
That's the Home Plate podcast at thegamenashville.com.
All right. We are back talking with TD. As the song said, time for some action. That's what it's time for Marcus Mariota. I'll tell you that much. It is, and I know you guys are kind of like, man, you're beating a dead horse. Stop beating a dead horse. But it's the biggest story for this team. What's going to happen with Marcus Mariota? What is he going to do? And I think when you look at this team, they are primed for him to have a career year. First and foremost, what do you have to do to have a career year? You have to be available. Availability is the best ability. You guys have heard the saying. So that being said, when you look at Mariota, he ended the year. I mean, this dude ended the year like he was in a war. You know what I mean? Like, there were so many injuries, you know, a torn plantar fascia, the multiple, the stinger, the nerve. This dude, the vertebrae, that guy was beat up last year. Make no mistake about it. I know people say, oh, well, you know, he should have played in that last game. Let me tell you something. Chances are a lot of these people saying it are the same ones that call out of work because they have a head cold. You know what I'm saying? I think you really have to put yourself in someone's position before you criticize them so viciously. You got people questioning his manhood. This and the third. Listen, I don't think he was capable of playing. And if he did play, I don't think he would have given much. That being said, the nerve injury, the biggest thing for the nerve injury, the biggest key to recovery was what? Time. He's had time to recover. I think when you look at him talking when he was available to us in early April, Mariota said that he is not on any individual development plan. That is huge because this means that he will be a full participant. He's going to be throwing. Now, that no IDP, individual development program, that came with a asterisk along with it. Because he said if he starts to feel anything, any discomfort, he's going to scale it back. So really, really monitor how involved he is throughout this offseason process. That's going to help you understand where he is as far as the recovery from the nerve damage. One of the other things that he did during the offseason was bulk up. He didn't say it exactly, but when Jim Wyatt asked him if it was 10 to 15 pounds, he said, yeah, around that, or something along those lines. You could tell, and I posted a picture on Twitter, and they used it on NFL Live, a picture of Mariota's upper body. You could tell by his arms and his chest, he is a bit bulked up. I want to see where he weighs in. I'm not sure that they're going to share it, but he did bulk up, so he'll be able to better take that punishment. We talked to Mike Vrabel about that. I thought it was pretty interesting, his response to when he was asked about whether or not he wanted Mariota to bulk up. Let's check it out, see what he had to say.
We're looking for a strong player. This is a big league. You know, I can remember playing against John Elway and Dan Marino and these quarterbacks that they're big men. You know, we play against Deshaun, he's a big player, and Andrew Luck, and so I just want to make sure that we're doing everything we can and he's doing everything he can to stay healthy and stay durable and to be able to help us on the field.
So that right there tells you it was a concerted effort for Mariota to bulk up. They really want to make sure that he could show himself to be available for 16 games. It's something he hasn't done since joining the Titans, becoming an NFL quarterback in 2015. So, yeah, the odds are against him, but like they say in Dumb and Dumber, you're telling me there's a chance. And there is a chance that he could be healthy for 16 games. So we'll see how that whole thing works out. But I tell you, when you look at just the big picture, a part of being healthy, when you look at guys like Tom Brady, when you look, it's the best example is Drew Brees. Drew Brees doesn't get sacked a lot because that ball is coming out. It's a rhythm. It's coming out of his hands. You're not getting a chance. Aaron Rodgers, if you watch the Packers, when Aaron Rodgers is playing at his peak performance level, you're not getting a chance to hit him because it's all 1-2-3 slant, 1-2-3 out, 1-2 step and come back, catch the hammer screen. That's what they're doing. They're getting the ball out of his hands quickly. In order to do that and actually make something out of drives, what do you need? Playmakers. I tell you what, this team got some playmakers during the offseason, in addition to the playmaker they already have in Corey Davis. And when you look at who they were able to acquire, Adam Humphries, I mean, daggone, when you look at Humphries, this guy has a 70% career catch rate. if I throw you the ball 10 times, you catch it 7 times. That's basically what Jameis Winston and Adam Humphries were able to do, you know, when they were there. And if you look, 48 of his 76 receptions last year were first downs. That's pretty good. Now, just a little side note to kind of sneak it in there. Tajae Sharpe, 22 of his 26 receptions last year were first down. So, but when you look at how the Bucs were able to do and how the Titans were able to do, okay, the Bucs were number one in the NFL with 11.6 catches that resulted in first downs per game. I guarantee you that number is going down because the chain mover has been removed from the Bucs and placed into the Titans offense. The Titans, conversely, were 27th in the NFL, 9.8 first down receptions. And pardon me, that was a typo. It was 16.6 first downs per game for the Bucs. So there's quite a difference, 16.6, 9.8. That number is going to go up in large part because of Adam Humphries. And I tell you, when you have those little shifty guys, man, guys like Adam Humphries, they make a team have to, if they don't have that guy, they make a team go out and get that corner that is able to stick with those squatty, short, quick, lateral agility type of receivers like Adam Humphries. So you're helping your offense, but you're making opposing teams in your division have to go out and get somebody that could deal with you. Because there's going to be a lot of times where Humphries, you're going to see him run that whip route, right? You're going to see him release off the ball, stick his outside foot in the ground, go inside, stick his inside foot in the ground, and turn back, pivot back around. So they're pivot routes, pivot back around and run the out. And that thing is just virtually indefensible. That's going to be a key, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. You're going to see, I think the Titans' third down conversion rate is going to go up. I think it's going to get better. And that's going to lead to more opportunities for the offense to make explosive plays because you're going to paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. The defenses start cheating up. Now play action, bombs over Baghdad to Corey Davis running a post route, Taywan Taylor running a go route, something along those lines. So when you add a guy like Humphries to the offense, that really helps things out. And then the fact that he's so reliable. Mariota is a trust-oriented quarterback. He has to be able to trust that you're going to be where you need to be when you need to be. Touched on that in the intro. That is something that Dirk Cutter, Adam Humphries, head coach, that's what he said about that. He said if you want a reliable pro, a reliable receiver, that's Adam Humphries. It's a big-time signing for them. Now, if you guys remember, I was not big on giving him as much money. However, when you look at how the deal's constructed, it isn't that much money over the first 2 years. And then you have that wiggle room to get out of it if you want to. One of the reasons that you could get out of it, drafting A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, as I've said before, was my number one slot receiver. Now, granted, he's a totally different type of receiver from Adam Humphries. A.J. is going to get over, and that's not to say he's slow-footed at all. A.J. can run routes now, but he's going to get open by his big body. The separation he creates is going to be off of his big body. When you add A.J. Brown to the mix, I think that really helps this team and the chemistry. The chemistry, man. I actually wrote a few articles about being able to go off schedule. One of the things that I believe Mariota does well is extend plays. In order to extend plays to have them result in big plays, you have to have that chemistry. Your receivers have to know when to turn that route up. Other receivers have to know when to roll with. There's levels to it. And in each QB scramble drill, a particular pass catcher has a different role. We're going to get into that a little bit more as the season goes on. I want to kind of give you a perspective that A.J. Brown has when it comes to making that relationship with the quarterback and being able to have him trust you. Check this one out.
I would say just working 24/7. You got to build a relationship. Just like if you got a girlfriend, you want to build a relationship with her, you got to spend time with her. So that is my mentality. So just working with them and just having an IQ for the game.
That's really what it's all about. And anytime I ask Mariota about being able to be on the same page with receivers, that's what he says. He'll point to the practice field. He'll say it starts out there. And I think the good thing is he and A.J. Brown, they're on the same page. They both understand that time is what's going to allow that chemistry to develop. And I think once it does develop, that's when the trust is going to be there. I want to get into a Twitter question that we got. Tom Gower on Twitter, he asked me to speak on. So someone made a comment. Tom Gower on Twitter said, Titans QB point. One thing I've noticed with Tannehill, he's been a tentative MOF thrower, whereas Mariota's tentativeness comes from what seems like lack of conceptual clarity rather than related to area of field. So we'll kind of put that in English. Basically, what this guy is saying, and Josh Medina brought this to my attention, at Josh Medina 08, he wanted me to speak on this. So basically, he wanted me to give my perspective on that. And I think the tentativeness that Mariota has is twofold. I think, first, he's so focused on not turning the football over, he is a little more hesitant to make those types of throws that are in tight spaces and tight windows that could result in interceptions. I think when you look at Mariota and some of the things that he does, and the best example of this is against the Bills last year. And this is a good example of trust, too, because Jonnu Smith ran a corner route. He was open in the end zone. I mean, like, not in the end zone, but going towards the end zone. Would have been a big game. Mariota looked to that side, and it wasn't cover two, but it was kind of like a cover two look where you had the corner. He was defending. He was supposed to defend flat. There wasn't anybody there in the flat. So actually, it was an inverted cover two. That's what it was. And no one was there in the flat for him to defend, so he kind of drifted back to the corner route. Now, anytime you get any type of cover two look, it's instant. You're going to that corner route. If that cornerback, if he doesn't get there and it's just slightly open, that's where you're going right away. Mariota saw that. He didn't throw it to Jonnu Smith. He tucked it back down and moved within the pocket, and to his credit, found an open man that just hit Nick Williams in a bad spot, right in the hands, and he dropped it. However, getting back to that route, when he saw that corner kind of buzzing back into that cornerback, buzzing back into that zone where the ball would have been, he didn't throw it. And I think a part of that was because he didn't trust Jonnu Smith also. Now, granted, when it's live action, you don't really have the opportunity to look and process that, hey, that's Jonnu Smith. I don't know if I should throw him the ball. But I just think, like, you know who is going to be where. And I just think that he just had that second doubt. So that for me, getting back to what Josh asked, I think it's a matter of being able to see things, trust it, and let it go. That's a hesitation that he has. But a part of that is because of scheme. And it goes back to him playing at Oregon. I mean, go back and watch some of those tapes. Those guys were wide open. Granted, Mariota did a good job getting them the ball, but he didn't really have to make those tight reads, those close reads. And that's something that just seems that he hasn't adjusted to, except when it's all on the table and it's time to go. That's why Mariota is such a good third down quarterback, and that's also why Mariota is such a good fourth down or fourth quarter quarterback, because when he has no choice but to make it happen, he makes that thing happen. And that's the whole thing. He has to figure out how to take that sense of urgency at that point and push it to the whole game. That's my take on Mariota, folks. That's pretty much where I stand. I think he is very capable of being an outstanding quarterback. So we'll just see how this whole thing rolls out. The weapons are there. The offensive line is there. This is his time to shine. So we'll see how he shines. We're going to go ahead to a break. We'll be right back with Calvin's Corner.
Stay up to date on the latest news in sports. Take us wherever you may go with the Game Nashville app.
Tap that app.
Just search ESPN, The Game Nashville, on Google Play or iTunes. And download the Game Nashville app now.
Back from the break, talking with TD. Going to bring in one of my favorite segments. I like to talk shop by myself, but it's always good when you could bring in a PNC, a partner in crime. So we're going to do that. We're going to go to the corner, Calvin's Corner, that is. Calvin, what's going on, man? It's good to be able to interact with you on this segment.
What's going on, Teron? Yeah, so someone actually got at me on Twitter for this segment. I put it out there. A couple weeks ago, I was like, look, get at me, guys. Like, I want to talk about what you want to talk about. So my man, Josh, at TitansFan_42, hit me up and he said, I'd be interested in comparing Mariota's career so far to his QB comps we've already seen, like the stuff on Morning Drive where they talked about Matt Stafford and some Alex Smith. And then someone responded to that and they kind of started talking about Matt Ryan. So first of all, Teron, I want to hear what your comp to Mariota was coming out.
Coming out, my comp was Colin Kaepernick, and that was just because of their ability to make plays on the run. I really thought they both did an excellent job of throwing the post routes, throwing those seam routes, and they both were getting opportunities to throw to guys that were wide open. But there were some throws that Kaepernick made that I don't think many guys in the league can
Kaepernick's
make.
Kaepernick's got a cannon on his arm.
A rifle, man. That
he
thing
can throw
is,
92 on the mound in baseball.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people don't know he was a very – highly recruited pitcher coming out. So for me, when I see – now, arm strength is not the same, but just the throws that they both excel at I thought was the same. And even their ability to threaten defenses mm-hmm. with their legs. And I'm not talking about threatening by running 10 to 15 yards. I'm talking about breaking that thing for 60 to 70 yards.
I mean, Mariota ran a sub 4.540, right? He can break one.
Yeah, he could definitely break one. And that's time speed. On the field speed when somebody's mm-hmm. chasing you,
yeah,
it's a little different. And he was fast in that perspective.
So the research I did for my guys, based on who hit me up on Twitter, I went and looked into Matt Ryan because someone pulled up a pretty interesting comparison of some raw numbers Matt Ryan had and said, hey, maybe Mariota kind of looks like him through their first 4 years. And we also talked about Alex Smith, who I think makes a lot of sense. And Alex Smith mm-hmm. in his first 4 years was not a good quarterback. And then Matt Stafford was also asked. So when I was looking at him, I thought, okay, to make this numeric, first of all, we have to make this kind of fair because football evolves, right? Passing environments change. And there's the theory of inflation, right? That, you know, numbers kind of over time have to be adjusted. So what I did was I looked at the passing environments from each of these quarterbacks' first 4 years, like what we've seen from Mariota, and tried to create a semi-inflation adjustment to look for. So for Alex Smith, basically he was just pretty below average across the board. The stats I looked at were passing yards, passing touchdowns, completion percentage, and net yards per attempt. Alex Smith was well below average in each of these. He only threw for 163.5 yards per game, 0.9 touchdowns, 56% completion percentage, and not even 5 net yards per attempt. Not good numbers by any stretch of the imagination. So then I tried to compare it to the time period he was in because they didn't throw the ball that much between 2005 and 2009 like they do right now. Uh-huh. And still, pretty bad. 21% below average, 35% below average. Everything was pretty bad. Then I went on and looked at Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan looked really nice. His first 4 years were between 2008-2011. He was 5% above average in passing yards, 8% above average in passing touchdowns, 0.5% better in completion percentage, and 14% better in that four-year period on net yards per attempt. That's pretty good, especially for a first four-year quarterback, guy like Matt Ryan. That's impressive. And then I went to Matt Stafford. Now, Matt Stafford, and Marcus Mariota turned out to be polar opposites.
That, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because when you said Stafford, I was like, oh, you got one guy as a gunslinger that will turn the football over and not care. You got another guy that's petrified of doing it.
Exactly. And Matt Stafford had these great cumulative stats. He threw for a lot of yards and threw a lot of touchdowns, but his rate statistics, not very good. His completion percentage was just 49.5%, net yards per attempt at 6.16%. Both of those are over a percent below average. So not awful, but compared to his cumulative stats, which were fantastic, 284 yards a game, almost two passing touchdowns a game, those are great numbers. And now let's get to Marcus Mariota, the Titans comparison part of this. So cumulative stats, like I said, where he's exactly opposite from Matt Stafford is in the cumulative numbers, the total passing touchdowns and the total passing yards. He threw for 214 a game, yards per game, and 1.2 passing touchdowns. And, you know, I think a lot of that's systematic, because this Titans offense has not ever tried to air the ball out or play to maybe Mariota's strengths. And so he came out well below average, almost 10% below average in passing yards and over 20% below average in passing touchdowns. But you get to his rate statistics, and his completion percentage was very average, almost exactly average for the time period he played in. And then you get to his net yards per attempt, where he put up 6.43, which is pretty good. That is 1.66% above average. So in evaluating Marcus Mariota against these guys, he's the exact opposite of Matt Stafford, who just puts up big cumulative numbers and kind of just throws the ball around the yard. Matt Ryan was good across the board. Matt Ryan is probably one of the more underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. And Alex Smith was slow to start his NFL career. But I think if Marcus Mariota turns out like Alex Smith, that's not an insult, because he's a good quarterback who can go in and win games like we've proven, but he's not an over-the-top great guy. And right now, with the trajectory of Mariota's career, if he develops into what Alex Smith is, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I think Alex Smith is the best comp for him. You mentioned the first 4 years. I tell you what's interesting. The 1 year where Alex Smith was in an offense that would have allowed him to throw the football, he got beat out by JT O'Sullivan. And after he got beaten out After he, and this guy was a sidearm, the Kent Tecovey sidearm thrower of quarterbacks. But after he got beaten out, he was hurt. He was out that whole year. So I think when you look at Mariota, I think these guys are very similar in that they've had multiple coordinators. They suffered from not having a lot of weapons. I know there was a point in time where Alex Smith had Frank Gore and Vernon Davis. That was it. The receivers were guys like Arnaz Battle, a former quarterback at Notre Dame. You had Rashid Marshall, a quarterback at West Virginia. Jason Hill. You know, you had guys who were not that good. So I think when you look at Alex Smith and Mariota, these guys are very similar. And even just in their play, both are safe quarterbacks, whereas you would see the safeties kind of cheat up against them.
Because those guys aren't going to, you know, chuck it 70 yards.
They're not going to chuck it 70 yards unless you force them to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Alex Smith was able to find later in his career. I remember the playoff game against the Colts, the Chiefs versus Colts. He came back, and the Chiefs won that game. They came back. He passed for over 300 yards, three touchdowns. That was Alex Smith's ability coming to the forefront. Ironically, like Mariota, he's a guy that you could really win by using RPOs. You could really win by using read option as well. Very similar players. I think if Mariota could get in a consistent scheme and be able, as we mentioned, to take that sense
of
urgency.
That's key number one.
That's key. Then that sense of urgency. As far as having to make plays and making plays when you absolutely have to, I revert back to 2011. Alex Smith is not a guy to throw into tight spaces. They were down to the Saints, against the Saints. They were down. Alex Smith, he made this throw that he had no business throwing, a quarterback like him, but he made the throw. Vernon Davis cut in. Malcolm Jenkins was a defender, and so was Roman Harper. He fitted in between those two guys, touchdown. The 49ers took the lead, and they ended up winning. They beat the Saints in the NFC divisional playoff game. That's an example of making a play when you absolutely have to, and your ability comes to the forefront when you have no choice but to throw the football.
Yep.
That's what Mariota has to do.
when I look at this, I see, when comparing Alex Smith and Marcus Mariota, two guys who both had bad cumulative stats. In terms of just racking up pure numbers, neither one of them do that. But their rate statistics are closer to average or above average in Marcus Mariota's case. So that's where I see the similarities statistically, is that neither one of them are out there going to go out there and wow you on the initial stat sheet you think of passing yards. You know, they don't throw for these 400-yard games and six touchdowns. Maybe more methodical quarterbacks might be a word, who can control the game instead of dominate, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely think there are guys that are game managers, but there's nothing wrong with being a game manager when you're managing to win. Yeah. I think to an extent, that's what Carson Wentz was for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Dak Prescott does for the Cowboys.
Yeah, if it's the Cowboys could just modernize their scheme a little bit and get some receivers, they'd be better. But they have Amari Cooper now.
Yeah, Amari Cooper, I think, is definitely a major weapon. And when you have a weapon, you just tend to play better. When you have a guy that you could trust.
Go-to guy. And hopefully A.J. Brown or Corey Davis can be that for Marcus Mariota now.
Right. And, you know, I want to just kind of get into something, because you mentioned A.J. Brown. I mentioned a guy that they could trust. We got a good quote from a former NFL quarterback that I think would be really good just to kind of touch on how Mariota can take his game to the next level. Because when you have a guy that you trust that can make plays for you, I think that really brings good things for you. So let's see what a former quarterback, Dan Orlovsky, a friend of the show, let's see what he said about A.J. Brown and Marcus Mariota.
I'm telling you, one of the steals of the draft, and I think a guy who could have tremendous impact on his career, is A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown was the guy that I liked the most as a receiver this year. He's Juju Smith-Schuster to me. He is a guy that Marcus is going to be able to see, drop back, move around, and go, I trust that cat. I trust that when I throw this ball to him, he's going to go at it like it's a paycheck. And that is going to be a big growth process for Marcus this year. Just getting back there and cutting it loose, because at some point, you do have to trust those guys.
That's it. He mentioned Juju Smith-Schuster. Who does Juju, or who does Ben Roethlisberger trust the most? I mean, he trusts Juju more than he trusts the guy that you know, was his number one target for multiple years before then. So trust is a huge thing. A.J. Brown is going to be that guy. But you also have Delanie Walker coming back, who has averaged 77 receptions, 898 yards, just over five touchdowns every year that he and Mariota has played together. They've done an excellent job of making sure that pretty much whatever direction Mariota looks, there's somebody that he trusts.
And I think, you know, we talk about this team needing to be able to stretch the field vertically, but the stats show Marcus Mariota has never been good at that. And that's not what they did at Oregon. That's not what they do here in Tennessee. It just kind of, you can't force that on him. And A.J. Brown is, like we talked about in the previous episodes, he had a lot of yards per catch, but he didn't go out and wow you on the 40. He ran a good 40, but, you know, his ability to get open and be a good route runner is going to be more beneficial to Marcus Mariota's strengths than I think, you know, someone like, you know, a John Ross who ran that great big 40 or whatever.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, AJ is also going to get you yards after the catch. And just looking at it, this is interesting. ESPN Stats and Info, when I did my AJ Brown article last week, I asked them for just some different stats, right? And air yards, okay? So A.J. Brown had 24 receptions that in which the ball traveled 16 or more yards for 679 yards. 24 receptions, 679 yards, three touchdowns. Conversely, he had 73 receptions in which the ball didn't travel 15 yards. On those 73 receptions, he gained 888 yards, three touchdowns.
Everyone talked about Paris Campbell in this draft as the yak guy, the yards after catch, the speed demon. But A.J. Brown put up the numbers to be up there.
Yeah, oh yeah, without a doubt. Now, you're talking about two totally different guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. Using a stat that both of them can be measured by, the yards after the catch, they're in the same division now too. Yes. So that's going to be interesting. Then just to kind of take it a little bit further, when we talk about how he could stretch the field, eight receptions, 281 yards on go routes. The most yards he gained on routes, which this works in Mariota's favor, The curl route, 25 receptions, 313 mm-hmm. yards. The dig, 9 receptions, 170 yards.
Wow.
So
that's almost
screen,
20 yards a catch.
Yeah. And the screen and quick throws, 17 receptions, 142 yards. So make no mistake about it. The comeback, 2 receptions, 28 yards.
He this brings guy with the a developed full, route tree.
Exactly. Exactly. And there are other routes, the outs and slants I didn't even mention
yeah.
that were on the chart. But I think that's really a good example of how having a guy that you could trust really helps you. So we're going to go to a break. We're going to come back with the final segment, touch on a little community work, also touch on the undrafted free agents that I think have a chance to make the roster. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Thomas Willis.
And I'm Brooks Bratton of NashvillePredators.com, and we're the hosts of the Predators official podcast on Saturdays at 8 a.m. on 102.5 The Game and TheGameNashville.com.
The POP offers inside access to the team, the best interviews with your favorite Preds players, and hockey stories in a new and fun way. Catch us this weekend and subscribe at NashvillePredators.com/podcast.
Belong to the city. That's how the song goes. I tell you, when you look at the Titans, this is a team that belongs to the city. I just want to take a second just to shout these guys out for their work that they're doing in the community. Ben Jones, he had a celebrity charity clay shooting event a couple weeks ago, and a lot of the Titans came out. The proceeds went towards underprivileged youth. I thought it was really cool. Ben Jones, his father died in a helicopter accident when he was younger. His family took and they did a lot of things for the people in that community, the kids in the community that didn't have rides or money to play different sports. He made sure, his family made sure that they were able to, you know, get those kids to the different fields and to the practices and make sure they have money to play sports. I thought that was a great thing. So shout out to Ben Jones. Logan Ryan was there. Kevin Byer was there. Taylor Lewan. Tajay Sharp. You know, the name Sharp, he was a sharp shooter. Mike Vrabel was there. A bunch of guys were there. So that's one example. Kevin Byer, he had a camp last week. It was a free camp, over 200 kids. They got to interact with the different Titans. Jarrell Casey, Logan Ryan, Kenneth Durden. Ty Smith, a lot of guys were there, man, and obviously Byer was there. He interacted with the kids. It was awesome the way before they broke to their position groups or their different stations, he had the team pastor, the team chaplain say a prayer. Let them know from the jump, God first, and I think that's an awesome thing. I know the religion is something that we get a little touchy about, but I think, you know, by all means, if you have the man upstairs in your life, good things are destined to happen to you. Byard showed that. And then at the end, kids got to eat a little Chick-fil-A. You know what I mean? Made sure he fed the guys afterwards, too. A free camp, by the way. So that's something. Logan Ryan and all of the things that he is doing. Make sure you go and get your tickets to the Chow Down event that he's having on May 31st. That's going to be a great event. Some of the Titans are going to be there. Obviously, Logan Ryan, we know him as someone who makes sure that everything is taken care of when it comes to the dogs, man. He's huge on that. So wanted to just kind of tip my cap to the guys for what they're doing in the community. Every week over the last 3.5 weeks, you know, you've had these guys doing the caravan, too. They're out all over the place. I mean, they're going to be in the Chattanooga area. They're going to be all over. Shout out to Rashawn Evans for being at every single event. These guys are awesome. So that's why I let off with you belong to the city, because these guys belong to the city. The city belongs to them. Folks, go out and support your team, man. That's really just the best thing that you could do to, you know, show your appreciation to these guys for what they're doing. They don't have to do it. This is done on their days off. So it's just all from the rip, from the heart, from the muscle to make a contribution to the community. That being said, we're going to wrap up on some of the UDFAs. I think there are a few guys that can make this roster. We're going to use the phone a friend kind of capabilities. Emory Hunt, the czar of the playbook from Football Game Plan. Be sure to check out footballgameplan.com. They have a scouting department. and they have seen pretty much every guy you see in uniform for whatever team. So I reached out to Emery. I wanted to get his take first on Kareem Orr, the DB out of Chattanooga, who also started at Arizona State. This is what Emery had to say about Kareem Orr, a guy I think has a very good shot of making the roster.
Kareem Orr was a former Arizona State Wildcat who had 5 interceptions his freshman season, made all-conference, then transferred over to Chattanooga where he became a combo guy, played a little bit of corner, played a little bit of safety, also led the SoCon in interceptions as well. So he has the ball skills, he has the matchup capability, and he's one of those prospects that you'll find down the line contributing on special teams early but finding his way within the regular defense.
When you have a guy that could do those type of things, this league is all about matchups. So when you have a guy that can match up against, you know, a unique skill set that another team's receiver brings, it's a good thing. Special teams is key too. 12 career interceptions. It's very clear Kareem Orr is a ball hawk. And the fact that he's a combo guy that could give you play at safety as well as cornerback, that's something that this team could use. Don't be surprised if he makes the roster. So that's one guy. And then another position that we know that they need, and this guy, I think, has the best shot out of all the undrafted free agents of making the roster, is Derek Roberson. And he's a guy 6'4", 250, an edge defender. He played mostly with his hand in the dirt. He played a lot with his hand in the dirt. It's going to be an opportunity for him to kind of see things standing up as a pass rusher. Let's get what Emery had to say about Derek Roberson.
I'm a big fan of Derek Roberson's game out of Sam Houston State. You talk about a prospect that was playing along a star-studded defensive line with P.J. Hall, who's now with the Oakland Raiders. And this was a guy that was virtually unblockable himself, 25.5 TFLs, 14.5 sacks. And what I like about him is that he has that dip under move, kind of like Harold Landry, where you can't really get a good hand on him because he's such a shorter player at 6'2", about 235, 240. But he has a knack of closing the corner and getting the quarterback on the ground in key situations.
Just to kind of give you an idea, and I'm not comparing these guys to what Dean Pease had in the past, but one of Dean Pease's best defenses, I think it was 2015, he had Suggs and Elvis Dumervil coming off of each edge. But when you look at a shorter guy that could come off the edge, and actually, you know what? He's had multiple ones, but when you look at a shorter guy that comes off the edge that's able to win those matchups, I think there are pluses for a guy who's quote-unquote undersized. I think you'll see it from both guys. I'm really looking forward to see how Roberson is able to work out. Another guy, Anthony Ratcliffe Williams, I think he has an opportunity to make this roster as a special teams player, as well as a guy who could line up. He was actually Emery's top-rated X receiver. Emery talked about him a couple weeks ago. So those are three UDFAs who definitely need to, draw your attention. That's the show, folks. We're going to keep rising and rising and rising. I appreciate you for tuning in. Be sure, at @TDavenport_NFL. Make sure you shout me out. Any type of mailbag questions that you have, we'll be sure to answer it. I'll talk to you guys next week. We're out of here. God bless. Good night.